Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests will be discussing an interesting topic, no two of which are related. My first guest is a social psychology professor at Tufts University. We'll discuss how understanding the context of any situation can transform your world from his latest book, Situations Matter. My second guest is the son of Eleanor Powell and Glenn Ford. We'll discuss his new biography of his father's life and what it was like growing up with Hollywood royalty from his book, Glenn Ford, A Life. My third guest is the undisputed authority on vitamins and health. We'll discuss his latest book on managing allergies naturally, titled Dr. Earl Mandel's Allergy Bible. And if you want to join in the conversation, or if you have a question for any of my guests, you can call me at 639-0008. Sam Summers is an award-winning teacher and researcher of social psychology at Tufts University, just outside of Boston. His research specialties include how people think, how they communicate and behave in diverse settings, as well as psychological perspectives on the U.S. legal system. At Tufts, Sam is known for his engaging lecture style and has won multiple teaching awards, including Professor of the Year back in 2009. He was also voted the hottest male professor on campus by the student newspaper. In his free time, Sam enjoys hanging out with his wife and his two daughters, blogging for Psychology Today, batting leadoff for the vaunted Tufts Psychology Summer Softball Team, and exerting more effort than he probably would care to talk about editing Seinfeld and The Daily Show clips for use in the classroom. And if time permits, we'll talk to him about copyright and royalty rights as well. Welcome to the show, Sam. How are you today?
I'm good, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. And, you know, because I interview a lot of business authors and so forth, we hear a lot about personality and character and what they mean in business and in life. And certainly in the post-recession world that we are now, the post-great recession world that we're living in, we buy, how we select our friends, all of that relies more on character of the person or the company or than the product itself. You, on the other hand, you insist that personality and character are overrated, that there's something more important than either of those two things, and that you call context. So give us an example of selecting, give us the example that you use in the book of selecting a game show host to tutor your child on European history to make your point.
Sure. Well, that example, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, personality is overrated. And the example I give in the book is that we tend to think about the people around us in terms of being stable personality types and overlook the situations that they find themselves in. And we take that so far that we actually start to ascribe to people we see on TV the traits of the character that they're playing. And so we get surprised when we see actors who their characters don't like each other, but the actors themselves are getting along and laughing on the red carpet. That sort of surprises us. And so the example in the book is if you had to pick a tutor for your child in European history between, you know, Pat Sajak and Ryan Seacrest and Alex Trebek, who would you choose? And everyone almost comes back and says, well, I pick Alex Trebek. He's the host of Jeopardy. Seems like a smart guy, and I'm going to go with him. And he may very well be a smart guy, but we overlook the idea that these are people playing roles, reading from cue cards, and we don't know anything about who they really are as people.
It is an interesting premise that you have. So that's an example of what you call in your book WYSIWYG, the acronym WYSIWYG. Explain what WYSIWYG is in social situations.
Well, it's this idea that, again, what you see is what you get, and it's the sense that the behavior that goes on around you that other people display somehow must reflect some true self or permanent personality type within them. And the argument that I make in the book, that, like you alluded to in the introduction, is that personality is overrated. I mean, it does play a role, but we can find ourselves being very different people in very different situations depending on who we're with, what's going on around us, and so on.
Well, I mean, that's an odd statement. I mean, you assert that each of us is not the person that we think we are. And what do you, first of all, mean by that? And why? How do you think that, well, go ahead and talk to me. Why do you think that that's important? Why are we different people at different times?
Well, I mean, think about what the world of self-help tells us, right? I mean, you go to the bookstore, you watch Oprah whoever's inherited the throne to Oprah's world, and you know, you hear these gurus of self-help telling you that it's all about finding your core self, your true self that's sort of hidden within you. But it turns out when you look at the science of the matter, when you ask people questions about who they are, their identity, their even their likes and dislikes, they give you very different answers depending on who's asking the questions, depending on who's sitting in the room with them as they're answering, depending on what they're thinking about and what mood they're in. So this notion that even as individuals with identities, that's stable and that there's a true self lurking within us, we're very flexible and wind up behaving and thinking in very different ways depending on the situations in which we find ourselves.
All right. Now, that goes contrary to almost all of pop psychology, that the goal is to be a well-adjusted person, is to be consistent in who we are, in what we think, and how we act accordingly. You're saying that that's just not true.
Well, what I'm saying is the reality of the matter is that we change dramatically depending on who we're with and the context that we're in. That when you think about dimensions like whether we're heroic or cowardly, whether we're independent or go along with the flow, all those kinds of dimensions, those distinctions, whereas we maybe think of ourselves as being very constant and consistent on those traits, in reality, the factors that make us likely to, for example, get involved in an emergency and help someone else versus stay removed and not get involved, there are some really strong situational factors that make all of us more or less likely to get involved in situations like that. And so the reality of the situation that we, or the reality of our human existence, is that our human nature is very context dependent.
All right, and I want to come back to that whole idea of helping people in a crowded situation. We'll do that in just a minute. But here's the problem that I had in reading your book. So if who we are is situational and how we act is situational, then are the ethics that we display in any given situation also situational? And if they are, doesn't that lead us down a slippery slope?
I think it's a great question. You know, I study the legal system, and legal scholars love nothing more than the slippery slope argument. I think it's a great question. So let me be clear. My argument is not that we're trying to excuse or exonerate people's behavior based on the situation. It's not, well, this person didn't behave the way we'd like them to. It's the context's fault, and they're not responsible. So the purpose of this book is by no means to excuse bad behavior, but rather to understand what the true nature of human nature really is, and to understand what the factors that actually shape our behavior are, because only if we understand those can we do a better job of thinking about how we change people's behavior, of how we fix certain institutions or systems that might not be working as efficiently as possible. So my argument would be that the reality of human nature is that it is very context-dependent. We can aspire towards a higher goal of always getting involved in helping our neighbor and so on and so forth, and that's great. The reality of the fact is we don't do that right now, and so understanding why that is, I think, as a behavioral scientist and just as an ordinary person, that's really important.
All right. My guest is Sam Summers, author of the book Situations Matter, Understanding How Context Transforms Your World. And Sam, in your book, you address some of the dark sides of human nature as well. Two findings about human behavior in crowds are particularly disturbing to me, especially since over 50% of the world's population now lives in a city. And that's the first time that's ever happened in human history. Crowds diffuse our personal responsibility is one of your findings, and crowds smother our independent thinking. It's something that you call in the book sensory overload. How so? What do you mean by that?
Well, when we are in a crowd of people, it does change the way that we perceive the world around us and how we interpret what we see and how we interact and so on. For example, just being in a crowd of people makes us less likely to notice the needs of others around us and makes us less likely to assume personal responsibility for getting involved in their affairs. So it is, at some level, the book an exploration of the darker side of human nature, but at the same time, sort of the take-home message from many of these chapters is that once you realize this, once you realize what's really governing and shaping the way you're reacting to these situations, you suddenly have the power to change that tendency, to break out of that default mindset and be more independent in certain circumstances and to get involved when people need your assistance and so on.
All right. Well, give us the example that you use in the book about a person in the subway, in a crowded, say, New York City subway, and they're pleading for help. What can we do about that situation? First of all, set it up, and then what can we do about that situation?
Well, there are a couple stories in the book, and one of them is a story of a tourist in New York who passes out and winds up dying and riding the subway around for several hours without anyone getting involved and doing anything. And there's other examples of people calling out for assistance and so on. What we know from the research is that, again, being in a crowd makes us less likely to get involved in other people's affairs. Even just thinking about a crowd or visualizing a crowd can do that. And so one of the messages in that chapter is that when you need help, when you're in a situation where you need assistance, whether it's an emergency or otherwise, what you have to do is break through that crowd mindset. You have to single somebody out and say, "You, yes, sir, in the blue jacket, walking by, I need your help. I think I'm having a heart attack. Call 911 right now." And that might seem ridiculous, but that's the way you break down these boundaries and these situational forces that govern our behavior, by being specific and not allowing someone to have the responsibility for helping you diffuse to others.
So you really take the responsibility and place it on that person so they can't shirk their responsibility, is what you're saying.
Yeah, just think how different it is to get a mass email that goes to 30 people asking for assistance versus a direct request that you help. I mean, in the first case, it's easy to let it slide and have other people pick up the slack, you hope. But when someone asks you directly, it becomes much harder to not assist.
My guest is Sam Summers, author of the book Situations Matter. And Sam, some of the other interesting findings in your book is that one of them that I found particularly interesting is that gender differences are more explained by socialization than they are by biology. We've always been taught that, you know, biology makes men men and women women. Certainly it does that. But the way in which we react to social situations, it's not. You highlight the difference between men and women's responses to three very interesting questions. You ask men and women the same three questions: will you go out with me, will you go home with me, and will you go to bed with me? And you got very different responses. Talk to me about what was the purpose of that study and what does it show?
Well, those research studies show that men and women do, as I think many people would predict, respond differently to the romantic or even sexual approaches of strangers, that men are far more likely in those studies to say yes to questions involving sexual interaction with a stranger. And I think, like you said, we tend to think of sex differences as being these hardwired, very genetic and biologically based differences. But what's, I think, fascinating about the reality of sex and gender differences is just how context-dependent they can be. And so there are studies that I talk about in the book, for example, that other so-called truisms that we assume to be the case, like, well, you know, women are picky about their mates and men are not, you can actually turn that on its head by changing the situation around. If you have a speed dating event, for example, and you have men sit still and women rotate around and actually approach the men, that somehow being approached makes you more likely to be picky than it does when you're doing the approaching. So just who's approaching who actually is a better predictor at some level of pickiness in romantic and sexual relationships than sex and gender. And we tend to think about things as more of this, like you said, men are from Mars, women are from Venus kind of mentality.
Well, Sam, and I found this interesting and almost counterintuitive, because historically, throughout the millennia, the men have been the hunter-gatherers. We've been out on the plains. We are the one who are foraging. Our eyesight is keener, and that's what we cue off of in sexual and romantic relationships. But this study shows that that's not always the case, does it?
Well, yeah, it shows that while there's certainly, and I'm not by any means suggesting there are no biological differences between men and women, clearly there are, but we don't give enough credit to the socialization processes, the contextual factors that shape, in the book I talk about differences in aggressive tendencies, differences in spatial skills and navigational abilities, math ability, a lot of characteristics that we sometimes think about as being ingrained, having these hardwired sex differences. It turns out that very small tweaks to situations and context can make them disappear, even turn them around altogether.
My guest is Sam Summers, author of the book Situations Matter, Understanding How Context Transforms Your World. And Sam, it's interesting, we're going into the holiday season. The holidays really present a very unique opportunity to pay attention and to notice situations. And behavioral science demonstrates that how we think and what we do varies dramatically by simple situational considerations like, you know, where are we, who's around us, what others might expect of us. What situations should we be paying attention to during this holiday season to be more aware of what's going on around us, Sam?
Well, the holidays are a great reminder of just how powerful situations can be, right? I mean, I remember the first time I went back home for the holidays from college, and you realize, you know, the house that I grew up in, it has a smell like other people's houses have. It has sounds like other people's houses do, things that I never noticed when I was ensconced in them and I took them for granted. And same thing more socially. I think a lot of us have that experience of suddenly we're not with our own spouse and kids in our own house in our own world, but maybe back with parents or with siblings and falling back into some of the same social interaction patterns that we used to demonstrate when we were teenagers or adolescents. And so I think that that's a pretty salient reminder of just how powerful situations can be. When you find yourself in those old situations with those old emotions flowing back, you realize just how profoundly your personality and your tendencies are transformed by the context in which you find yourself.
Well, let's continue on with that example of returning home from college, because that is a great example. You know, you go away to college, all of a sudden you're on your own, you're making decisions for yourself, you're finding your own way, you're really setting who you're going to be emotionally, mentally, and everything else for the next part of your life. But when you come home, you're still somebody else's child,
right?
And so forth. So how do those interactions play out in family situations?
Well, I think that's one of the challenges of the holidays for a lot of people. I mean, as much as we love the holidays, they're stressful too and can be disconcerting in the sense that we have these different roles that we're balancing, and suddenly they're, you know, we're thrown into the mix and have to deal with them all at the same time. For Thanksgiving, I spent time with my family and just having fun playing board games with siblings and brothers, and all of a sudden, before you know it, we're arguing with each other the way we used to when we were teenagers, and you see yourself as this supposed adult acting the way you used to as an adolescent, and that can be disconcerting. And so it is true that once we leave home and reach these other stages of life, we become different people, and when you have those worlds collide, so to speak, it can lead to some interesting effects.
It certainly does. My guest is Sam Summers, author of the book Situations Matter, Understanding How Context Transforms Your World. Sam, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Situations Matter?
What I want them to do is I want them to take a step back and not rely on the default knee-jerk assumption we have that the world is dictated by personality types. What I want people to do is take a step back and think about the ways in which, you know, ordinary situations shape how we think, what we do, and who we really are as people. Because when you do that, when you get a sense of how the context around us changes the kind of person that we are, it makes you a more effective person. You're more able to get accomplished what you want to accomplish and so on in life.
It certainly is a thought-provoking book. Sam, if people like what they hear, they're intrigued by what you have to say, they want to learn more about you, maybe learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
www.samsummers.com. That's SAMSOMMERS, one word. They can also, that same handle, that's my Twitter handle, and they can find a Facebook page as well. So it's all sort of linked together, but there's good information, some of the relevant blogs you talked about, trailer videos, excerpts from the book, and a lot of that in those various locations.
Sam, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you.